Blog Talk Radio.
September 10th, 2014, and tomorrow is September 11th, 9/11. It'll be interesting to see. Hopefully, there'll be no events tomorrow like there were back in 2001. Yeah, it's a lot that's relevant considering people like Vidar Quisling, the Norwegian Nazi supporter and sympathizer who set up his own national party or joined one in Norway, and his name Quisling has become synonymous with treason and traitor. We don't hear it as much as we did back around World War II and after World War II, but it's still a very relevant word. But among the birthdays today, remember I forgot it was one of the TV shows with Rowan and Martin called Funkin' Wagnall. The guy who invented who created the Funkin' Wagnall dictionary, Isaac Kupnus Funk, was born on this day. If you remember King Kong, the original King Kong, and the woman he had in his hand, in his paw, I guess, Faye Ray, born on this day. He never lost his accent. Edmund O'Brien, he was in the original Julius Caesar with Marlon Brando, didn't lose his accent also. It had a lot of great actors, but Edmund O'Brien didn't sound like a Roman senator with his New York accent. He was also in the World War II film about Normandy, The Longest Day, where he played, a general. One of the great sopranos, who was from Peru, and a lot of people still don't know who she was. She had a five octave range, and that's unusual, and it's quite a natural attribute. Yumak Sumac, we'll see if we can have any of her recordings in our archives. Do you remember the CBS Sunday program, On the Road? Charles Carroll was born on this day. Great musician, Puerto Rican ancestry, who's blind, Jose Feliciano, his birthday today. Among the deaths today, if you remember the Cisco Kid, Leo Carrillo. We also had the last execution with the guillotine of a guy who committed murder, Hamdi Djoubi. I guess he was a North African in France. Great French singer who was a leftist, also married to Simone Signoret. Yves Montand died. He died at 71. He was relatively young. Among the events today, Nathan Hale in 1776 volunteered at Washington's request to spy for the Continental Army and for the in the Revolutionary War. He was captured and was convicted. it's quite interesting. So was the British spy, Major Andre. But anyway, Nathan Hale, before he was hung, reportedly uttered this: "I have only one life to give for my country." Unfortunately, Americans still do not understand spying. It's very necessary. Every country does it. Even friends spy on friends. Look at the allegation or the accusation by the German chancellor, the lady, who said that the NSA, according to her discovery, revelations, that NSA was listening in on her phone calls. Now, the other question is, was German intelligence listening to everybody else? They all do it. The British do it. The French do it. The Russians do it. The Chinese do it. They're more subtle about it. But it's a necessary and often ugly, brutal part of preserving one's national security. So Americans still think that spying is a dirty word, but it's maybe dirty, but it's necessary. People and governments cannot give it up. Mrs. Merkel. Anyway, also on this day in 1813, talking about our Great Lakes, on Lake Erie, which is usually associated with pollution, our fledgling Navy, Oliver Hazard Perry, defeated the British ships on there, and his famous statement after the battle, which he won, was, "We have met the enemy, and they are ours." In 1913, since we're all concerned about traveling, and of course this is out here on the West Coast, this is our summer, the Lincoln Highway, which was the first highway, went from coast to coast. That was open. In 1924, in one of the most notorious murders in Chicago's history, two wealthy Jewish boys, I don't know if they practice, Nathan Leopold and his lover, Loeb, decided to do a thrill crime, and he picked on a fellow Jewish boy, Bobby Franks, and brutally murdered him. Well, caused them to be caught was the fact that I think it was Leopold lost his glasses. So the police got the glasses and checked with all the opticians and optometrists in Chicago and discovered who issued that prescription. And it turned out these were two 18-year-olds, and they were convicted, but they had the greatest defense lawyer at the time, and I'm going to play the clip that we have in our archives, Clarence Darrow. I'm sorry, it wasn't Charles Darrow, it's Clarence Darrow. And this
people
is what he
think
had.
There is no cause for crime, except the pure cussedness of the ones they call criminals. But as a matter of fact, there's a cause for everything in this world. And there's no way to remove the evil without removing the cause. There's a cause for all sorts of human conduct, just exactly as there's a cause for all physical action of the universe. The real cause of crime is poverty, ignorance, hard luck, and generally youth. These almost invariably combine to produce what we call a crime. When we look at the prisoners in the jail, we find that all of them practically are poor, at least 9/10, and these have always been poor. At least 9/10 began what they call a criminal career as mere children, 11, 12, 13, at a time of life when the ways of life are fixed. 9/10 of them also are ignorant. They've never had the training that every intelligent parent would think was necessary to keep their child out of prison and make him safe in the community. All of these things what people in jail.
That was the great Clarence Darrow. Now, which is the opposite of this audio clip, Nathan Leopold and Loeb came from wealthy Jewish families in Chicago. There was no excuse for what these two 18-year-old boys did. And Clarence Darrow saved them from the electric chair, which is what the execution was in Chicago at that time. And they both went to, I think, Stateville Prison. Now, Loeb, and when he was in the showers, he propositioned another inmate, and the inmate killed him. Leopold was paroled, after 40 years, I think. He went to Puerto Rico and became a nurse, and he married a woman. He died recently. This thrills killing, people in Chicago never understood it. And when I was in the federal courthouse working as a clerk, this came up. Of course, there was a lot of things. This was also about the same time of Al Capone, whose goons are killing one another, and Bugs Moran, and all these people who were involved in illegal liquor and prostitution and extortion, all that sort of thing. There have been others, a case that I was involved in, a case that when I was growing up in rural Cook County, where the Schuslers and Peterson boys back in the late 50s were found, their nude bodies were found by the Des Plaines River in that area. And they thought until recently that they would never find the killer. The killers were believed to be someone connected with a stable, I forgot the name, and also John Gacy may have been involved. Now, the John Gacy case is very interesting because when I was back in Chicago for 1 year. I lent my truck to Hugh Rodham's people who were doing some work on a bar that he bought, a gay bar that he bought in what was called Newtown area of Chicago. And one of the construction workers there, a young man, a young, you know, youth, his brother had been murdered by John Gacy, and of course the kid was very bitter about that brutal murder. The second connection to John Gacy was with a relative of mine, distant relevant, who was a 14-year-old boy, and we did the interview. John Gacy tried to pick him up on the north side of Chicago in what is known as the Scandinavian area up by Foster. And what the kid noticed, and it's in the interview that we did, was that there was no way for him, if he got in the car, there was no way for him to get out. It was probably the modus operandi that John Gacy used to pick up young males, and there are an estimated 30 of them. Some of them have never been identified. But and there were a couple other horrible sexual murders. The Herons case, they were connected in Chicago. So it's just part of the history of the place. And, of course, they happen out here, too. We've had the Manson, which is I met Manson on the street when I lived in the Haight-Ashbury, and he backed me off the street. I didn't know who he was. And also the Juan Pifere case, who used to lure young military servicemen to his house, apartment, and where he would try to induce them, force them into S&M, and there were battles. His own lawyer testified against him in the Steve Neri case, which was coming up next month, the history of it in Fleet Week. Also, there have been other mysterious murders. We suspect that Sidi, a young boy, very slight, was picked up by a homosexual. This is from Cognoscenti, who are familiar with that lifestyle, are familiar with those people who are in that lifestyle. Also, there was another case of Tree Frog Johnson, who abducted a young Vietnamese boy and a young girl and sexually molested them in a van, which is down on Mission Bay. and I used to park down there, and there was something funky about that van, but I never called the cops and minded my own business. And later turned out for several months that Trufog Johnson had been molesting these children. So these things are out there, and unfortunately we have the morons in the media who cover up a lot of this stuff. Another case, although I wasn't directly involved in it as an investigator, was the Brian Hennessy case, which involved a young Mexican or Latino boy of 16 or 17 years old, whom Brian Hennessy tried to lure into, tried to rape. He seduced him into giving oral sex, and the kid, they got into a fight, and the kid stabbed him and was convicted, which is really strange, and spent nearly 15 years in state prison. Later was paroled, and I believe he's out of the state. Certainly a question there. The other questions are, and other controversies about these homosexual murders was Randy Kraft, who was sitting on death row in San Quentin, who used to lure both military and civilian young males to his house and to his car, where he would drug them and then sexually abuse them and then mutilate them, and they dumped their bodies all along the California coast, all the way up into Washington, as Washington State, and as far east, I believe, as Michigan. So these things are still out there. And of course, the morons and media cover up a lot of this stuff. Another sexual case, which involved an employee of the San Francisco General Hospital, was a doctor who lured a young man named Mondelli. He was treating him for depression, and he lured him into a sexual relationship and then tried to brutally axe murder him. And then the young man was brutally mutilated and sued the city. This case was covered up also, but we have some of the documents. So these things go on. Now, getting into things more currently, Patch Butler, who has been around for 50 years as a real journalist in the Chicago and Cook County area, remembered the days of Wage in 1969 after the 1968 Democratic National Convention, which I covered as a videographer, filmmaker. What happened was I had left for California. And in 1969, there was Bill Ayers and that crowd, the weathermen, had this protest, which some of them are alleged to have had or accused of having weapons and explosive devices. And they were tearing up Michigan Avenue, which is the million-dollar mile in Chicago. And then the sheriff of Cook County, a guy named Richard Elrod, got into a collision with one of them, and Elrod broke his back, and he was partially crippled even to this day. He later became a Cook County circuit judge. That's how these things work. And that's like a state judge, a local judge out here in the West Coast. Anyway, what went on is that these people have stirred up a lot of trouble. They've been involved in bombings. This is Bill Ayers and that crowd. And some of them are suspected of having gone to Ferguson, Missouri, and stirring up trouble there, trashing stores, stirring up the natives, as some of us refer to these people. There's no excuse for what happened there with the destroying businesses and the violence. This thing we still haven't got all the facts of what happened in there. But we have one San Francisco black newspaper. It's unfortunate. They're now saying that Michael Brown had paid for those, or is suspected of paying for those cigars. And again, the reason that Brown and people like his age who are into marijuana buy these cigarettes, they take the tobacco out, and then they re-roll the cigarette with marijuana. And another thing about marijuana, one of the myths about marijuana is that it's harmless. The marijuana of today is very potent, it's deadly, and they're finding this out in Colorado where they've legalized it, where people are smoking joints while they're driving, and they're worse than drunk drivers. The pot of today, or marijuana today, is not the love bud that we had in the 60s when the stuff was mellow. But now, because of all the pollination techniques and the THC level, it has really been raised in this marijuana, and the stuff is dangerous. It's as bad as drinking a whole bottle of 80-proof liquor. in my opinion. And I've smoked pot, I've drank, and I haven't touched this stuff in a long time. And it was a phase that we all went through during the 60s and early 70s. But these are among the political fictions that we have by these people who are promoting this sort of thing. So we'll be back. We will have Elrod's part of his interview and part of Bill Ayer's interview. We've got to dig through our archives for that. And then we'll be back Friday, and hopefully we'll have more up on the Amicus Veritas YouTube site. And hopefully we'll have our AmicusVeritas.net. In AmicusVeritas.net, that will be updated. And we're going through all our archives. We've got close to over 2,000 interviews, and we have videos, which is about 700 of those. We'll be putting up the best of, and also documentation from our print archives of Veritas USA, where we exposed dollar-a-month houses here in San Francisco. These are houses that were publicly owned by the Redevelopment Agency and Housing Authority, which were given to, like in one case, Mary Rogers, for a dollar a month, which she refused to pay, and she ran up $500 a month in water bills. We have the documentations on that. Also, these illegal aliens are coming here, like Campos, the Garcia, who came here from El Salvador when he was 12 years old. We have the Garcia clan, crime family, and they are abusing American citizens and even citizens who are naturalized Americans who try to obey our laws and who come here not to co-opt and corrupt, but to create and contribute. There's an interesting case of one guy who came from Ireland, Northern Ireland, I believe, Jewish background, family's Lithuanian, originally from Lithuania and then came to Ireland. Came here, and I met him back in the 70s, came here with $4 in his pocket. Today, he's a millionaire living in Berkeley, and he had a little business in Berkeley, a little stand of juices, and he parlayed that into a million-dollar business, which was written up in San Francisco Business Times, which I didn't write about that, but I did write for that magazine. So we're going to end with our usual politics and poker, and we'll be back Friday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. And also check out other things on the web. There are other people writing things like Breitbart, World News Daily, WorldNet News Daily. We're all trying to expose all this corruption and trying to make this a better place, not only for our children, but for our grandchildren. America, we believe, is the hope of the world. That's why a lot of people want to come here. Also, another issue is nobody's asking the question about Jerry Brown's statement that there are going to be 10 to 15 million more people in California. I don't know where he got that. None of the media who covered that or who've written about it have brought that up. Also, with all these worldwide epidemics of Ebola, tuberculosis, this mysterious respiratory disease that's striking children, we don't know what's coming across our border and the health status of these people, what they may be carrying. And there is a movie called El Norte, which involved illegals who came through the sewer lines in San Diego and came down. If you go through a sewer line, you're going to get contaminated. And so these are some of the problems. We know there are these tunnels down there by San Diego, which people who are illegally entering the United States are coming through. And, of course, we don't know what the situation, what their health status is of these children. And they're allowed to come into our schools. We don't know if they're being subject to medical examination before they're allowed to enter the classrooms. They are putting us at risk for a political agenda, which is destroying this country. And we've got to stand up, speak out, stand firm. And now we're going to play our theme, Politics and Poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I. Five.
King two.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear.
We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bat up.
Politics and polka, politics and polka, shuffle up some cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck.
Now, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS. Also, if you have some comments, appreciate them. Go to pverzola@gmail.com. And also, any suggestions or some other topics you'd like to hear about, we have a huge library of videos and audio interviews that we've done in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States. And we're still doing a few today. They cover people like Mel Belli, Roger Karras, Dr. Michael Fox. We've had some of the top veterinarians in the world. U.S. Senator who was a veterinarian, interesting perspective. So all these things. So anyway, we'll be back Friday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Stay safe. Good night. Mm-hmm.